Back When is sponsored by Siwi, the National Trust's photo printing partner. Every image captures a story. Siwi's support means the National Trust can protect our nation's memories by caring for and sharing our vast collection of historic photographs. Through our work together, we're uncovering precious and previously unseen images for everyone to enjoy. Discover our work snapshotting 200 years of history. Search online for Siwi, that's C-E-W-E, and the National Trust.
Elizabeth Clark says that he was lucky that he hadn't leapt onto his face, squeezed down his throat, and deposited a feast of toads in his belly. I can feel this is a woman at the end of her rope. She has been kept up for 4 days. She's elderly. She has one leg. She's poor. She probably just wants all this to be over. And I don't like to think about where she'd gone psychologically to get to that point.
In the UK, more than half of us own a pet. And I've got three cats, Paddy, Lily and Sanna. We feed them, speak to them and keep them safe. But 400 years ago, doing any one of those things could have led to your death. We're taking you back to the 1600s, when keeping a pet could have got you accused of witchcraft and uncovering the strange stories of witches' familiars. Have you ever imagined being a fly on the wall of history? Join me for an inside view of the stories of people, places and moments that made us. I'm historian Helen Antrobus. Lean in for a tale from time back when. Life's hard for regular people in the 1640s. There's political instability, the English Civil War is raging, and communities are poor. Life's even harder for older people, particularly if you're a woman. Because of your age, you might have lost your husband and live alone. You might find it hard to make friends. So poor and alone, you befriend a stray cat. You offer it scraps and perhaps give it a safe place to sleep in exchange for comfort and company. And the next thing you know, your neighbours are accusing you of witchcraft. And if you're found guilty, you'll hang. Situations like this are not so uncommon. Women who are already outliers in society are suspected of witchcraft. If they're seen to do anything that isn't the norm, which could just be feeding a cat. But why is this the case? And why are cats and other animals so linked to witchcraft? Well, to understand that, we first need to know why the hunt for witches began.
My name is Dr. Romani Reagan. I'm a scholar of what I like to call dark heritage and feminist stories, untold stories and hidden histories. The stereotypical idea we have today of a witch is usually of a woman. She's quite evil. She's on the fringes of society. She isn't very attractive. She's old. And that is something that was born out of the later witch trials. If we look at the long 400-year history of the witch trials, originally it was for acts of heresy. So to be accused of witchcraft was actually to be against the church using magic in some sort of way, whereas later definitions of witchcraft then became more personal and more against women specifically. People were losing their children, their crops were failing. There was political instability. People needed a reason. And it's much easier to believe that there's someone inflicting this pain on you than to think that you're out of control in your life. Then you get the neighbors accusing their neighbors, and that was usually the most vulnerable members of society, which would have been the older women. It's quite sad when you consider that the people that they were launching all these complaints against were the ones who had no one to advocate for them.
Between 1542 and 1736, approximately 1,000 people are killed for being so-called witches. Belief in witchcraft and accusations of it fluctuate in popularity. But during the height of witchcraft hysteria, self-appointed witch hunters look for telltale signs of witchery. One of the signs that someone might be a witch is if they had an unexpected relationship with an animal. As animals with no obvious use are suspected of being the devil in disguise, luring people into the realm of black magic.
we love our pets so much, it's really hard to think of and cast our mind back to what society thought of animals at that time. Animals belonged in barns. They belonged in fields. They could not be kept close to humans. When it comes specifically to the idea of the animal familiar, was this idea that these people being on the fringes of society, they didn't have friends. They didn't have any kind of opportunity for closeness and companionship. The animal must be working for you. And if that job isn't necessarily obvious, then maybe it's something secretive and it's scandalous and it's probably even satanic. And especially, too, if somebody is seen speaking to these animals, well, the idea of somebody just having a lovely conversation with their pet cat, which now today we think of as quite normal, this would be no-no. What was specific about the idea of keeping a familiar was that Satan would usually come in different forms. And so he would often appear as animals, because the idea was that in order to seal a pact with a familiar, you would be feeding them blood to have them perform the evil deeds. But no one actually saw this. And if something's done in secret, how can you prove that it is or isn't done?
What's interesting about the idea of animal familiars at this time is that it's uniquely English. And this is because of Protestantism. Witchcraft and religious beliefs are closely entwined. And you can see this reflected in the way witchcraft was thought to take place. In Europe, where many people have Catholic beliefs, witches are thought to go to a specific place to meet with a familiar and speak with the devil. This is in parallel with how people would go to church to meet with a priest and talk to God. In England, where many people now have Protestant beliefs, the devil is believed to come to a witch's home in the form of a familiar, in the same way that regular people might pray to God at home. So how do animals like cats get people into trouble? One of the most well-documented cases is that of Elizabeth Clarke, who is the first woman to be persecuted by the self-proclaimed witchfinder general Matthew Hopkins and his associate John Stern. At a time of heightened paranoia about witchcraft, Hopkins claims to have been officially commissioned by Parliament to uncover and prosecute witches. He and Stern are the driving force for the witch hunts between 1645 and 1647. Elizabeth Clarke herself is believed to be from a family of witches. So when one woman in the village becomes unwell, her husband blames Elizabeth.
She was very elderly, very poor, and she was living on parish charity. He was the first to accuse her, and the rest of the community were very quick to fall on board as well in any kind of grievances they could think of. They harassed her so much that she actually confessed to it. She said, yes, absolutely, I have had dealings with a devil and many witches besides. But she refused to name any of these witches. I think she was just kind of talking a bit of trash, actually, just to get them off her lawn. That's what I think. But they took this and they ran with it. They took what Stern had written of her supposed confession, which to me is just a woman yelling on her porch, and from there they got a warrant. And this warrant allowed them to gather the searcher to come and search her. And with them, Matthew Hopkins and John Stern were able to also watch her.
When someone is accused of witchcraft, they're tortured until they reveal their otherworldly powers. They're pricked with needles to see if they bleed, they're stripped naked and searched for a witch's mark. And they're kept awake and watched intently.
So you're the prickers and the watchers who would corral this woman in her home for 4 days and four nights, and they sat her on a stool and they just stared at her, basically, and they just made sure that she couldn't sleep. You can see the fever dream aspect of it. You've been up for days and you are expecting malfeasance. You know she's a witch. You're just waiting for that proof. And she lasted out for 2 days before she started to name names. Then she started to discuss her familiars. And you can understand this now as a kind of fever dream. She talks about the animals that come to her and what their names are. And you can almost envision her making them up on the spot because they're bizarre names like Vinegar Tom or Sack and Sugar. And so eventually when a small cat comes into the house, oh my gosh, finally, this is the familiar. And so there was a cat, that wasn't a cat. And there was a dog that, oh no, it wasn't a dog. And then eventually there was a rabbit that came in, and this was Sack and Sugar. And this is when we get a quote from from Elizabeth Clark herself, Stern is kind of making a joke, saying, "Oh, this is your grand familiar," and she says that he was lucky that he hadn't leapt onto his face, squeezed down his throat, and deposited a feast of toads in his belly. I can feel this is a woman at the end of her rope. She's been kept up for 4 days. She's elderly. She has one leg. She's poor. She probably just wants all this to be over. And I don't like to think about where she'd gone psychologically to get to that point. And with regards to her supposed familiars, we have a small white cat. We have a fat white dog. Then we have a tall, skinnier dog. And then we have a rabbit. That's it. Maybe they made all this up, but it does seem like perhaps these animals genuinely were in her house. But it also seems to me that if you are an elderly woman who's cast, you're an absolute castaway from your society, you don't have an opportunity for love and companionship, but you do have a dog, you have a cat, and you have a rabbit. And that's that. And that was enough to have her marked for execution, which she was later that year, so it was quite swift, and she was hanged for witchcraft in 1645.
Elizabeth Clark isn't the only woman to be accused of witchcraft, partly because she kept pets. But her story is one of the most well-documented at the time. Having said that, familiars are actually more popular in witch hunt propaganda than they are in the trials themselves. The mystery and intrigue surrounding their supposed relationships with witches fascinates the general public, which is perhaps why, so commonly, we see witches with an animal sidekick in fictional stories today. Cats, owls, toads, bats, and rats are all some of the familiar characters we see in fiction like Harry Potter, The Worst Witch, and Halloween celebrations. But behind the folklore and the fiction is a much darker truth. Darker truth. In reality, people are looking for someone to blame for their hardships. So the truth is twisted to fit a narrative and explain their misfortunes. Anything seen out of the norm can be used against you. And ultimately, if you have the misfortune of being an animal lover who is seen as an outsider, you are an easy target for an accusation of witchcraft. If you'd like to explore objects and links to witches at National Trust places, head to nationaltrust.org.uk, where you'll also find Halloween events and activities for the whole family. Thanks for listening to this episode of Back When. If you've enjoyed it, make sure you follow, rate, and review us on your favourite podcast app. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another story. See you next time. This podcast is sponsored by Siwi, Europe's leading photo printing company. Every image you capture tells a story. Discover ideas for curating and creating your special memories and unique gifts for loved ones. From high-quality, personalised photo books to wall art made from your favourite photos. Head to Siwi, that's cewe.co.uk, and start creating your story.